This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. Today, our special guest, Chandler Gould. Chandler is CEO, National Association of Wheat Growers. He'll join us in just a moment. First off, Brad Rippey is a meteorologist with USDA and looks at states with notable soybean crop leaf dropping.
There's a large number of states where the progress on leaf dropping is at least 10 points ahead of the five-year average. But even more impressively, we have three states in the Midwest, Illinois, Missouri, and Ohio, where the progress on leaf dropping is more than double the five-year average pace. The three examples there, Illinois, 62% leaves dropping versus 31% on average, exactly twice normal. Then Ohio, 59 versus 26%. Missouri, 35 versus 16%. Compare that with Minnesota, 23% of the leaves dropping. Five-year average is 39%.
This is the Agribusiness Report. I'm Tony St. James. We're joined today by Chandler Gould. Chandler is CEO, National Association of Wheat Growers, headquartered in Washington, D.C. Chandler, always great to see you.
Thank you for looking forward to the opportunity to be on your show and to talk today.
Well, let's start with a busy week. And it started with a fly-in, a farm bill fly-in. But this is, I guess it's important for wheat growers, but it was really a united effort from all commodities.
It was, you know, agriculture really hits Washington, D.C. that first full week after Labor Day every year, regardless of what's going on. But, you know, this year, of course, at the tail end of a one-year extension of our farm bill, not only was wheat in town, but corn, soy, rice, cotton, farm credit, the bankers came as well. And we all met here actually at the NOG office. All of those organizations had their members in town, and we did a briefing for everyone. And then we released about 85 growers from across all those commodities up to Capitol Hill. And they did a little over 140 meetings with our House and Senate members to discuss why we need a farm bill this year and why we can't handle another 1 or 2 year extension. That is simply not going to solve the problems that we have in rural America. As cost of production continues to rise, we must get this farm bill done by December 31st. And I feel that we were definitely heard and definitely seen as we had all those meetings up there.
You know, some might ask, okay, you're telling that message, but there's a limited amount of time for Congress to actually act. Do you think that message was heard loud and clear?
I know the message was heard. You know, we've seen things even out of the minority the ranking member, David Scott, you know, to a dear colleague, to his Democrats, saying that we need to have a farm bill done by the end of this year. It was actually Chairman Thompson who asked us to do these multi-commodity meetings. And so I know that they're wanting that extra support coming from the agriculture industry. And the reason we're not asking for is an extension. You know, right now the House is looking at how to continue to fund the government. Now, this is strictly like, if I could just say, please do this, this is how I would do it. But you know, if they could extend the government by funding by 3 months into December, and then that would give us a vehicle to attach a five-year or full-length farm bill to send that back over to the Senate for consideration. So, yes, you're right. We are running out of days, but there's still a pathway forward to get a farm bill done. But there's a couple things that can't happen. We don't want a long-term extension of funding, and we don't want a extension in the farm bill so that we can possibly move it after the election.
Okay. And just if you could kind of point these out on your fingers here, what would be the priorities for wheat growers?
Well, I mean, of course, our first one would always be crop insurance. And then our second would be to strengthen the Title I program so that that actually reflects what the cost of production would be. Continue to maintain our voluntary conservation programs, double MAP and FMD, and then, of course, continue to move into credit and all the other titles along those lines. But crop insurance, strengthening Title I, conservation, and then promotion programs. Those would be the main issues that we continue to work with both the House and Senate Agriculture Committees.
That was a busy week because that was part of a large effort to take a message to lawmakers, but then you have an annual meeting, the North American Millers Association. Tell us about that.
Yes, yeah, so we wrapped up our fly-in on Wednesday, and then I hopped a plane and headed out west and met with the North American Millers Association. I had a great meeting out there. We got to talk about a lot of the things that NOG has been working on, not only the farm bill, but, you know, some of our cover crop issues where, you know, winter wheat is 70% of the wheat production here in the United States. And it literally meets all of the definitions and criteria for a cover crop. It is a living plant with a living root system. It is planted in the fall. It lives through the winter. And then it's, of course, harvested in the spring, which is what makes it ineligible to be a cover crop. And so not only last week did we do that fly-in, myself and several of our officers met with Secretary Vilsack to discuss these cover crop definition issues that is excluding wheat from those programs. And of course, I carried that message to the North American Millers Association, where they are also very interested in sustainability, carbon sequestration, and things along those lines, and was able to talk to them about that. Also, our life cycle assessment that NOG and the National Wheat Foundation, the U.S. Wheat Associates, has all come together. That is finished up, and we will be rolling that out in October and November. And really was enjoyed the time there with the millers. You know, they're basically our first point of sale as the wheat growers. And so it's great when the supply chain can get together and work together towards the issues to make sure that we continue to have high quality wheat in the United States.
Let's build on that high quality wheat. There's something known as HB4 wheat. And for those who don't know what this is, how can you best describe it, and why are we talking about it?
So HB4 is a gene edit or a GMO wheat that has been deregulated in the United States for consumption. I'm going to be very clear. It's just deregulated for consumption from a company, Biocrest, from Argentina. And for NOG and the wheat growers, this is a huge win. And it's because, you know, corn and soy have been able to take advantage of gene innovation and gene technology, you know, basically since the 80s. And if you think back 25 years ago, when I started working in agriculture policy, you didn't have 72-day corn, and you didn't have corn growing on the Canadian border, and you do now. And so by having this drought-tolerant wheat being deregulated for consumption, we're really hoping that this opens the pathways for cultivation at some point here in the United States. We continue to lose acreage in the wheat industry here. And in order for us to continue to be competitive against our other commodities here domestically and to help us combat the continuing changing weather patterns, this is a big win. Now, I also want to just tag that on there, though. We are very aware, though, that we have to make sure that we have the consumer's confidence in this, as well as our trading partners on the Asian Pacific Rim and Europe. So it's not a done deal, but we're definitely moving in the right direction to help narrow that gap between corn, soy, and wheat so we can continue to be a profitable and competitive commodity.
Chandler, you mentioned it's from a company outside of the U.S. Is this actually being grown anywhere else?
It is. Actually, it has been being grown in Argentina. And so, you know, we can let them see how they, you know, work with a biotech wheat and what are they going to do with their trading partners that will accept it and the ones that won't. So hopefully we won't have to reinvent the wheel if and when cultivation is approved here in the United States.
Now, for producers, it's back to them. I mean, without producers, you really don't have much of an organization. So I know that you get your marching orders from them. As you look at things like HB4 wheat or other research that's going in, is it all trying to drive the return on investment and to help make those producers more profitable, or just in some cases profitable, period?
Well, it's actually doing both, Tony. I mean, you know, look at the last two or three years where we have had major drought, whether it was in the Texas Panhandle, Oklahoma, Kansas, our largest wheat production state in NOG, you know, had a two or three year drought there. And so this drought tolerance is going to be able to help us, you know, maintain those acres and continue to be competitive and hopefully turn a profit. But, you know, that profit is also backed up if we get a farm bill in there to help us with some of that risk management, whether it be on the revenue or production side. So, you know, this is all working together. We have to have a risk management tool. We need to make sure that we continue to keep open markets and also have the innovation that we can be competitive when it comes to other commodities here in the U.S. And then, you know, climate change or erratic weather patterns, whichever one of those two words makes you feel more comfortable. But the weather's going nuts out there, and we need to be able to combat it and continue to move in a profit direction.
Okay, last one for you. I've got a feeling you and I will see each other, if not before then, maybe in Denver in 2025. Why would we both be in Denver at the same time and maybe not on skis?
Yeah. Well, now I can already tell you I'm going to go ski right before the Commodity Classic meeting, and I might already have a hotel booked after Commodity Classic. But we want to invite everybody to Denver, Colorado to join us that first weekend or the end of that first weekend in March for Commodity Classic in 2026. It is the first time for Denver, Colorado to be hosting this fantastic agriculture trade show. And so we're really hoping that this time will really attract a lot of, you know, Colorado, Oklahoma, Kansas, Wyoming, a lot of those Western states that have not typically participated in Commodity Classic. We're hoping to draw crowds from there. And of course, our historic crowds from the Bow states in the upper Midwest.
And for someone who has never attended Commodity Classic, why is it something you should look into this year? What are you going to pull away as a producer?
You know, as a producer, any company or organization that you're involved with or anyone that you possibly purchase an input from, or whether that be crop protection tools, data, equipment, or maybe you're a member of the wheat growers or you're a member of the corn growers or American soybean or the sorghum, national sorghum producers, we are all there basically in one room where, and then we also have educational sessions. Each of the organizations have meetings there. We all have a booth. Next year is also going to be the National Association of Wheat Growers 75th anniversary. And so we're going to have a big to-do at our booth there, celebrating the 75 years of representing the wheat growers at the Commodity Classic in Denver, Colorado, that first weekend in March.
There you go. Commodity Classic. If we want to keep up with the National Association of Wheat Growers, it's my favorite question. Where do we find you online?
You go to www.wheatworld.org.
Chandler Gould, CEO, National Association of Wheat Growers, on today's Agribusiness Report.
Attention, High Plains landowners. The Sandhill Area Research Association proudly presents Your Legacy is Tomorrow's Water. We're joining forces with partners across Texas to restore 50 Playa Lakes, crucial for recharging the Ogallala Aquifer and supporting our unique wildlife. Be a part of this transformative initiative. Visit PlayasWorkForTexans.com for more details. Let's secure our water legacy together.
Success is attained by those who approach problems with a plan and a purpose. As an advocate for High Plains cotton growers since 1956, Plains Cotton Growers has been tackling the tough issues facing cotton growers through beneficial legislative and regulatory changes. An important part of PCG's success is through close working relationships with congressional representatives and federal regulatory staff, allowing cotton growers more time to devote to farming operations. From the halls of Congress to the dusty turnroads of the High Plains, cotton producers depend on Plains Cotton Growers.
Welcome back. It's the Agribusiness Report. Again, our special guest today, Chandler Gould with the National Association of Wheat Growers.
The Texas Corn Producers Association has long worked tirelessly in the interest of today's corn industry. Because you're busy farming and raising a family, so we're at the table when you can't be. But like you, we can't do it alone. Our strength is in our members, or strength is in you. Join us as we continue advocating for the American corn farmer. Visit texascorn.org and become a member today.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
You're listening to the Agribusiness Report. You can keep up with the National Association of Wheat Growers online, wheatworld.org.
Sorghum farmers, it's your time to shine. The 2024 National Sorghum Producers Yield Contest is open for entries. Compete in divisions like irrigated, dryland no-till, dryland tillage, and food grade. No matter where you farm, east or west, let's yield greatness together. Contest rules and entry forms are online at sorghumgrowers.com/yieldcontest. Enter by November 26 and harvest the win.
Truck owners, want to turn your truck into the ultimate workhorse or off-road beast? The possibilities are endless in making your truck more versatile, more fun, and higher performing. When it comes to equipping your truck, there's only one name you need to know. Rascal Supply. North Highway 87 between 98th and 114th Streets in Lubbock, or call 806-300-8007. For all your truck accessories, Rascal takes your truck to the next level.
This is the Agribusiness Report.
Several overall cotton crop progress categories reflect numbers above the five-year average. USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey says for the period ending September 15th,
cotton bolls passed the halfway mark during the week to reach 54% open nationally by September 15th. That's ahead of the five-year average of 50%, also ahead of last year's 52%. Looking at the harvest numbers, we have reached the one-tenth mark by September 15th. That is ahead of the five-year average of 8% and last year's 9%.
Yet with cotton conditions, the reports nationwide were mixed.
Good to excellent number, 39%. That's down 1 point from last week. Very poor to poor ratings, 26%. That is also down 2 points from last week. In other words, kind of a mixed report.
With cotton conditions by state, including Texas, reporting 36% very poor to poor condition rating, followed by Tennessee and Kansas. I'm Rod Bain reporting in Washington, D.C.